Hello and welcome to Conservation Connections. This is the monthly broadcast of Valley Stewardship Network, a nonprofit based here in Viroqua, Wisconsin. My name is Beth Summers. I'm the executive director at Valley Stewardship Network. And today in the studio, I'm joined by Maggie Jones, host of Natural Wonders here at WDRT. And today we're very pleased to welcome into the studio Dr. Stan Temple. He's a senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And happy to see you, Stan. After many years, I was one of his students way back in at UW-Madison in the Wildlife Ecology Department. So good to see you again, Stan, and welcome.
Good to be here.
So we are here to talk about your involvement with the Aldo Leopold Foundation and the work you've been doing for years and years about phenology and Aldo Leopold's shack journals and his observations on phenology. Tell us what phenology is.
Well, phenology is the study of the timing of seasonal events, and it is something that people have been doing in an informal way for millennia, when keeping track of the seasons was important for planting crops and knowing when opportunities for foraging would occur. But it's only since the 19th century that phenology sort of gained self-recognition as a science. And it has proven to be a resilient science in that the focus on keeping records of seasonal events has really blossomed in recent years. For most people, keeping track of seasonal events involves documenting the first occurrence of the year. So the first blooming of a plant, the first arrival of a migratory bird, things like that are what they keep track of. And here we are, it's September 1st, and we are starting phenological fall during the months of September, October, and November. And of course, we're all tuned in to what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Birds are going to migrate, leaves are going to turn, leaves are going to fall. Most people, whether they know it or not, sort of subconsciously keep track of when things happen, whether it's in their garden or in their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But phenology is having a heyday now. But it wasn't always that way. For Aldo Leopold, it was something that he started very young at. As a boy growing up in Burlington, Iowa, he started keeping phenological records in grade school. And his grade school journals document that even as a young boy, he was unable to sort of break away from this habit of keeping phenological records, which he did for the rest of his life. So something that he started in grade school ended up sticking with him quite literally almost until the day he died. And for Aldo Leopold, in one of his publications about phenology, he had quite a remarkable quote. He said, keeping records enhances the pleasure of the search and the chance of finding order and meaning in these events. Mm-hmm. And for Aldo Leopold, that sort of one sentence, it really described his relationship with phenology. He kept his observations in his journals throughout his life, and it was clearly about the pleasure of the search. He was simply recording what he and his family and students were observing in the field, and he did it in meticulous detail. But it was only then retrospectively that Aldo Leopold would go back to his journals, go back to his observations, and try to make order and meaning out of them, try to interpret what these observations meant. And that approach was a hallmark of natural history studies. Naturalists, people who engage in natural history studies, collect things. Most of you have been to a natural history museum. You know that what they do is keep collections of things, fossils and plant specimens and so on. Well, for Leopold, what he collected were observations in his journals. Mm. But the whole point of natural history is that it's not just about the pleasure of the search. You're supposed to go back and try to interpret what you have collected, whether it's fossils or your notes on seasonal changes. So Aldo Leopold did this, as I said, pretty much throughout his life. But by the time he came to Wisconsin in 1924, he was a fairly mature naturalist. He could identify and keep track of over 300 species of plants and animals, and did so quite, you know, religiously in his journals. And that's pretty remarkable. There are very few other people who kept track of so many seasonal events. There are old records of crops. The oldest ones are cherry trees in Japan. It's a 1,200-year record of when cherry trees bloomed. And, of course, from the agricultural community, they kept track of when things happened with crops. So cherry blossoms, apple blossoms, things like that often are documented for centuries, or in the case of Japan, millennia. But to document so many native species in one place at one period of time was really quite remarkable.
I'd like to comment that if a listener has not gotten a copy of the Sand County Almanac and read it, I so urge you to do this and read what Leopold wrote, and his observations are so poetically and beautifully written. It's so wonderful to read over and over again. You can't read them too many times without loving them every time. And I also wanted to mention that Sam Robbins, who was a Wisconsin ornithologist, and Reverend Robbins, was also urging people to pay attention to the last observation of a bird, or the whole cycle of the observations, and not just, it's so easy to mark the beginning of the arrival of a bird, but to mark the day that you haven't seen them, they've gone, they've left, they've migrated, is so interesting too. There's so many, I do think it's a very natural thing for everybody to observe things and to note these changes.
Yeah, you're right. And for those who have read a Sand County Almanac, the first half of the book is essentially a phenological sequence. Month by month, Aldo Leopold went back to his journals, which he meticulously kept at the shack, his weekend getaway in Sauk County, and picked a particularly iconic event, something that was happening during that month that he could write a really engaging short essay about. And I don't think there's any doubt that Leopold would not have been able, his book would probably not have attracted such a broad readership if that first half of the book, based on phenology, hadn't been so engaging. In fact, we can sort of infer that from the history of the book, that there were multiple publishers who rejected the manuscript for a Sand County Almanac. And basically, they rejected it because of the second half of the book, which is the really meaty part of the book, where he talks about our relationship with the natural world. And several of the publishers actually said that second half of the book is just too dense for most readers. We don't think anyone would be interested in it. But if you would just expand those lovely stories in the first half of the book, we might reconsider. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, Leopold resisted, finally found a publisher in Oxford University Press, who recognized the value of the second half of the book, in which Leopold introduces, really for the first time to the broad public readership, the idea of our relationship with nature having an ethical basis, what he called a land ethic. Mm. But for most people, if they've read a Sand County Almanac, maybe those publishers that rejected it were right, because I'm guessing many of them kind of stopped when they got to the second half of the book and were satisfied with just the lovely little natural history accounts. And all of those accounts come from Aldo Leopold's journals. You can go back to his handwritten journals, or now the transcriptions of his journals, And you can actually find the events that he recorded in his journals that were the raw material for each of these essays. Leopold's journals, in fact, all of Leopold's papers are preserved at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the archives. And until recently, his journals from the shack, some 1,100 pages worth, were somewhat difficult to access because they were handwritten in a very small hand, very tight handwriting with a pencil, so they were rather faded. But in the last couple of years, the Aldo Leopold Foundation has transcribed Leopold's shack journals so that now you can actually search them and you can go back through his journals and actually find the observations that were the basis for each of these essays that comprise the first half of the book.
Tell us the story of how the foundation found people to do that work.
Well, we were initially hoping to get funding for it, but the funding source rejected our proposal because they didn't think we could get enough volunteers to transcribe 1,100 pages of handwritten journals. We decided to undertake it anyway by asking volunteers to sign up to transcribe pages. And we had all the pages, all 1,100 pages were signed up for in 3 weeks, and we had the whole thing transcribed just in a matter of 3 or 4 months. So it's now available. So if you want to really sort of dig deep into any of the essays that may be your favorites, you can go back and actually find the event that Leopold recorded in his handwritten journals that formed the basis.
The Aldo Leopold Foundation website is one of my favorites. I love to go and read the blog and the stories of the fellows, and then now the transcriptions. And also, you told us that the transcriptions have been of other of his writings have been transcribed for quite a few years.
They've been digitized, and if they were typed or printed, the optical character reader could actually digitize them. So a lot of his correspondence, the papers that he wrote, the draft manuscripts for all of his essays, all of his publications, those were always easy to search because they had been typed. And it was really the handwritten journals that were somewhat challenging because the optical character reader couldn't read Leopold's handwriting.
You know, I have a question for you, Stan. You know, today we have all of these citizen science opportunities. We have eBird. People are out there tracking events. And so we have a lot more accessibility to the trends that are happening now. I wonder, how valuable is it to have these kinds of early phenological records for people to go back? Is anyone making comparisons using Leopold's data or other sources like that to current trends?
These historical records are incredibly important, especially something like Aldo Leopold's extensive records, because they document a period of time before human-caused climate change started affecting a lot of species and shifting their seasonal events. So Leopold's records, although they were published back in the 1940s, they were pretty much ignored as a source of insight on climate change until climate change started to become, well, what could you say, sort of undeniable. If you keep track of phenology, you recognize plants in your garden are flowering earlier, that birds are arriving earlier. So Aldo Leopold's daughter, Nina Leopold Bradley, when she returned to Wisconsin in retirement, she started keeping phenological records just down the road from the shack where she had built her retirement home. And for her, initially, it was about the pleasure of the search. She was recalling the good times that she had as a young girl, often in competition with her siblings to see who could find the first pasque flower, who could see the first morel mushroom, and so on. But she started keeping these records. And like her father, after a period of time, she started to look back at her records and detected a pattern. And that was that many of the things that she was documenting were happening much earlier than they had in her father's time, especially spring events. Spring is a sort of active time for phenology because so many things are happening, and they're easy to document because it's the first of the year. As you said, Maggie, documenting the last of the year is sort of challenging to do, but the first is easier. So Nina recognized the pattern and published a paper, which was actually one of the very first papers to use historical phenological records to document how plants and animals are responding to climate change. And since then, we've continued at the Aldo Leopold Foundation to keep phenological records, and we have used them in scientific papers. Some of you may remember 2012 was the record warmest spring for Wisconsin. Mm. And we were very anxious to see how all the plants and animals in our database would respond, especially whether we could predict, based on the trends in the historical records, how these plants and animals were going to respond to an unprecedented warm spring. It turned out they responded exactly as we would predict from the trends that we've observed over time. But for most people who don't read the scientific literature, the thing that we continue to feature from the Aldo Leopold Foundation is our annual phenology calendar. We use Leopold's historical data and the recent records to produce a very attractive calendar that documents for several hundred seasonal events when you can anticipate they will occur. And I provide some educational material as well as an attractive calendar so that every year we have a different topic that talks about phenology. This year in 2025, it was how plants and animals manage to put themselves into situations where the temperature is going to be ideal for their fitness, where they can survive and reproduce best. Next year, 2026, we're dedicating the calendar to Nina. So the calendar will feature Nina's phenological legacy and talk about her data and what it showed during a time from the 1970s forward when climate change was really starting to have a very demonstrable impact. And for those of you who may already subscribe to the calendar, you know how valuable this calendar is as a way to sort of alert you to when things are going to be happening each year in southern Wisconsin. And for those of you who aren't, you can go to the Aldo Leopold Foundation's website, which is very easy. It's aldoleopold.org, and you can order yourself a calendar. I think they're $18.95, includes shipping, and it'll give you a way to sort of enjoy the pleasure of the search and sort of keep track of things.
I look forward to seeing that. I'd love to hear about some of the things you've discovered with the transcriptions.
Well, for me, of course, I was very familiar with Aldo Leopold's journals and often went to them in their handwritten form to try to find information. But it was really tedious because you would have to page through page after page and read Leopold's handwriting to get the information that you were after. Now, it's very easy because you can type in a keyword and find any reference in Leopold's shack journals that correspond. And as we were sort of discovering things, we actually discovered an interesting mistake that Aldo Leopold made in his essay, Good Oak. For those of you who know Sand County Almanac, Good Oak tells the story of an oak tree that was struck by lightning, and the Leopold family turned it into firewood. And as they were sawing through the trunk of this tree, going through growth ring after growth ring on the tree, Leopold is recounting the environmental history of Wisconsin. So as he's going through the tree rings, he's sort of calling out important events. Well, it's a wonderful essay. It's one of the most popular essays, actually, in a Sand County Almanac. And in that essay, Leopold clearly describes the event, the lightning striking the oak tree, as happening in July. When we went back and used the transcription to search for the keyword lightning, we discovered a very nice description of the event, only it happened in June. And although Leopold was off by a month, it was because he couldn't go back and easily search his journals to find the account of this lightning-struck tree. He relied on his memory, and he must have remembered that it was during the summer and wrote it down as July. Mm. But there are other just wonderful things. If you're into birds, Leopold's essay 65290, which is about banding birds and chickadees in particular. And 65290 was the band number on a chickadee that distinguished itself as living longer than any other chickadee that Leopold had banded there. And if you go back to the journals and search for 65290, you can find page after page after page documenting Aldo Leopold's observations of 65290, including the first capture of this bird, and Leopold making a note as he banded the bird that this bird was particularly feisty and put up quite a struggle and drew blood from his finger, which may have been something of a premonition that this was a special chickadee that had survival skills that were going to make 65290 the longevity champion. But we also know from the Leopold archives, this time from the various typewritten manuscripts of 65290, the essay, that 65290 was not the original subject. The original drafts of the manuscript had a different band number, a different bird. And it was only very late in the process of refining these essays for publication that 65290 surpassed its predecessor and lived longer than the chickadee that had been the original subject of the essay. So there are just all kinds of remarkable things that you can now easily discover in Leopold's shack journals and relate to his essays. And from a scientific perspective, we can also go back and look at the individual phenological records for various species of plants and animals. And I discovered fairly early on in my explorations of Leopold's shack journals that every time he visited the shack, there was a phenology section of his journal account in which he documented all the things that he and his family and students were seeing. But if you look very carefully at the handwritten version, you'll note that over some of the observations, there's a little tick mark. And the little tick mark, I think I probably overlooked them originally, but then discovered that the tick mark was actually Leopold going back through his notes and documenting the first occurrence for the animal or plant and putting a little tick mark over it and extracting that observation in his journals and putting it into what I always sort of playfully describe as a 1945 Excel spreadsheet, in which he analyzed his records looking for the order and meaning and published a paper in 1947 that, as I described earlier, is this wonderful historical marker for the timing of seasonal events back in the 1930s and 1940s.
How many years have you been producing the phenology calendar?
Oh, I think we're up to about the 15th year now.
It must be interesting to look back to year one to see how it compares to today.
Well, and of course, the dates have shifted. So we constantly have to be sort of updating the dates that are published on the calendar so that they reflect when you could expect to see the event. And as I said, after 2012, we used the recent records to document how 23 species of spring flowering plants had responded to climate change, and it's a very, very strong response. When you do the statistical analysis, it's a very, very tight relationship between temperature and when these plants bloomed. So tight that we could accurately predict what would happen in 2012 during that unprecedented warm year. That year, for spring, for March, April, and May, by the end of May, I was like a kid on Christmas Eve waiting for the last of the phenological observations for spring to come in to see whether we could predict accurately what they would reveal. They did, and I was so excited about it that I contacted a colleague, Richard Premack at Boston University, who's also into historical phenological records. And he said, well, that's funny, Stan, because I'm doing exactly the same thing you are, only I'm using Henry David Thoreau's phenological records from Walden Pond, and I'm finding exactly what you found, and that is that the historical trends accurately predicted how plants and animals responded to the warm temperature in 2012. So we co-authored a paper, a scientific paper, describing our results, and we were fairly confident that there weren't many editors who were likely to reject a paper based on data from Aldo Leopold and Henry David Thoreau.
Oh, amazing. You are making your own phenological records, aren't you?
I did, and again, since childhood, when I was growing up in Washington, D.C., in this case, one of my mentors was Rachel Carson. And she kept phenological records and encouraged me as a young boy to keep phenological records. And I continued doing that when my family moved to Cleveland, Ohio, and I became active in the local bird club. The bird club published a monthly account called the Cleveland Bird Calendar, which tracked bird phenology. And I helped with preparing those records. And then when I moved to Wisconsin in 1976, I started a citizen science project called the Wisconsin Checklist Project that encouraged birdwatchers around the state to send their phenological records to me so that I could analyze them. It was a wonderfully productive project, and at the time, I was on the board of directors at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, my alma mater, and encouraged the Cornell Lab of Ornithology to start a citizen science project that was based on birdwatchers submitting their observations of birds. Most people today know that as eBird, and Cornell wisely waited to launch eBird until the technology was there so that people could upload their observations directly rather than, as I had to with the Wisconsin Checklist Project, deal with paper copies of their records. So for those of you in Wisconsin, you know, the Wisconsin Checklist Project was the sort of godparent of eBird.
What a great way to engage a wide variety of people in these kinds of observations, too.
Especially bird watchers who usually keep checklists of their birding activities anyway, so you're not asking them to do anything out of the ordinary.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Stan. It was great to have you on the show.
It's good to be here and good to see you again.
Thank you.